First, it's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. We'll get the latest on what the Postmaster General says he is and isn't going to do about controversial changes at the Postal Service, as well as a final Senate Intelligence Committee report on its own investigation into Russian interference into the 2016 election. And last night brought us, as we said, to the half point in the Democratic National Convention. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been watching the first couple of nights? What thoughts do you have, whether you are a Democrat, Republican, or other? Are you planning to watch tonight and tomorrow? What are you looking forward to seeing or hearing? What do you think they've done well so far? What else would you like to see or hear from this convention? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Fisher is a senior editor at the Washington Post. He's also co-author of the biography Trump Revealed, An American Journey of Ambition, Ego, Money, and Power. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you, Rob.
Well, you reported on reactions from some Democrats around the country to what they're seeing from this convention. What kind of things are you hearing from people?
Well, I'm hearing a real passion for unity. People want to defeat Donald Trump. Democrats do, at least. And they are coming together around that common goal. But behind that surface unity is a real divide over what the Democratic message ought to be. Should it be just we're the anti-Trumpers, or should it be a very detailed program of reform on all the issues that we've been talking about this year? There's a divide about that, about that kind of tactical question. And then there's the deeper divide, the ideological divide between the sort of left-wing Democrats and the more moderate folks. Many of the Democrats I've been talking to around the country really have not gotten from this convention a clear sense that even the party knows which of those messages it wants to put out this year. Obviously, they're trying for a sense of big tent coalition building, that kind of, yes, we all need to come together to win. But I heard from both people on the left and in the center that they wanted a little more meat put on those bones.
What kind of efforts has the party made to do that? I know there was the kind of Biden-Sanders supporters getting together to try to craft this this platform, this unity platform. What are we seeing at the convention, though, when it comes to efforts to lay out that kind of vision?
Well, we are seeing some moves in that direction. And there was, as you mentioned, this task force that Biden's people put together after he had won this commanding lead, where he brought in people from the Sanders campaign, from other parts of the left, to try to see if they could find some common ground. And as a result, Biden and certainly Kamala Harris along with him have moved left in a way, if very few people would ever read the actual platform of the party, but it exists and you can look it up online. And what you'll see if you take a look at it is that it is well to the left of any Democratic platform since 1972. That said, it's not everything that the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes of the world would want it to be. And there are certainly any number of issues on which Biden is sticking to his moderate traditions. So they are trying to be a little bit of all things to all people, but there's been a definitive move somewhat leftward to embrace some of the ideas around racial justice, climate change reforms, and other reforms that, and especially a re-emphasis on science and medicine as a way of getting a handle on the coronavirus.
Is this that unusual for, a party convention? We've seen Republicans in past years sometimes with social conservatives trying to make sure that their stuff ends up with commitments in the platform, and more maybe libertarian or economic conservatives having different approaches. Is this really that weird in the scope of American party politics?
No, you're absolutely right. This is par for the course. This happens at every convention. And what also happens after every convention is that nobody ever looks at that platform again. being a little bit exaggerating there. But in fact, the way politics works, the way government works, new issues will come along, new coalitions will be created. And so the platform is kind of a wish list. It's not really a menu. It's not really a directive for how a new administration would govern. And in that wish list are all the things from these two different factions. And what will happen is the elections will determine which of those items on the platform actually get moved on. And so the imperative to get Democrats elected, I think that's the Biden camp's argument all along. And that's the one that will eventually prevail, because if they don't win a Democratic majority in the Senate, they're not going to be able to put any of these reforms into motion. If they don't retain their House majority, they won't be able to do this. So it's building the broader coalition to get elected and get majority that really takes first order in the coming months and beyond.
Talking to Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can join in with your reactions so far to the Democratic National Convention and to this next story, the latest doings at the U.S. Postal Service, especially in an election year where a lot of ballots are expected to come in by mail. We had this announcement yesterday from the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, saying, hey, we're backing off. We're stopping making these changes, not going back on other changes, though. I want to give a listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on MSNBC responding to yesterday's announcement. Here's a listen.
Let me just say, nice try, not so nice try, on the part of the Postmaster General.
Yeah.
What he did was take three big steps forward and took one baby step back. And that just doesn't do it for us.
And DeJoy, the Postmaster General, is going to appear before committees in both chambers of Congress, I believe. What is your read on some of the latest back and forth over changes at the Postal Service?
Well, look, we have a bipartisan consensus here. This is very rare in Washington these days. Both Democrats and Republicans concluded that this issue was really hitting hard, that people across the country were enraged at the cutbacks and mail delivery and at the prospective cutbacks for a political purpose of dampening the number of people who could vote by mail. The Democrats, we see, immediately jumped on that. They're calling these hearings. They're bringing in the Postmaster General. If you're watching any of the convention, you're seeing lots of references to the Trump administration's attempt to tear down the Postal Service in the country. And the Republicans agreed that this is hitting hard because they immediately backed off. And the Postmaster General issued this striking statement, backing away from all of the delays and cutbacks that he'd put into motion. Now, will he really restore those cuts? We don't know that. That's what the hearings will try to elicit from him. But clearly, at least on a superficial PR level, this is a real retreat by the Trump administration. And as Speaker Pelosi points out, that doesn't mean that just because they've retreated rhetorically doesn't mean that they're going to bring back the level of service that would smooth the vote in November.
And we've seen Republican lawsuits challenging some changes in different states that would make it easier for people to vote by mail. Are we going to see this battle over not just the vote, but over how we cast our votes from now until Election Day, maybe beyond?
Well, we're going to see an initial battle, as you say, with these lawsuits and these various efforts by state legislators and governors, especially in Democratic states, to make it easier for people to drop off ballots at special drop-off boxes rather than using the mail system, those kinds of reforms. But they have to be done very, very soon because the rules of the election get locked down well before Election Day. So that's just a story over the next couple of weeks. Then there's the story that happens starting on election night. And up until then, there's a huge education process that has to go on, where Americans who expect results on election night are going to have to learn to be a little more patient. It's not entirely novel. We went through this in 2000 when the vote dragged on through the various court hearings and the checking of chads in Florida in the Gore versus Bush race that dragged on well into December. So we could see that kind of a long dragged out election return this time around, or maybe it'll go a lot more smoothly. The last few primaries have led some state officials to say, we've got this now, and we understand how to get these votes counted with relative speed, and it may not be quite that dragged out.
We invited listeners to call in about the Democratic Convention, the party, and its platform. Let's bring one on now at 800-642-1234. Mary is with us in Glendale. Mary, hi.
Hi. I have a question about whether they are going to discuss the fact that our military budget is so high, if you include the past wars. So the government now does not include the VA or things from past wars in the budget. They put it somewhere else. And so if you do include all those things, it comes to 52% of the budget. And that's a huge amount of our budget. I don't think we need such a huge military. They're antiquated in many ways. They need reform.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Let's talk about that. Now, at the convention, we had former Secretary of State John Kerry, former Republican Secretary of State and retired General Colin Powell attacking President Trump on foreign policy and defense issues. But some Democrats saying this is kind of the old guard and more, you know, addressing some of Mary's concerns, you know, more pro-military, pro-war than, say, someone like Mary might like. What are we seeing in the platform and the messaging here?
Well, we're on the cusp of some sort of a party realignment in our country. We have a president who has led the Republicans into a withdrawal from American military presence in places like Germany and South Korea, who wants to kind of pull back his whole America First approach. That is not a traditionally Republican position. Similarly, on the Democratic side, we've had several Democratic administrations, the last two, Clinton and Obama, that were very strong supporters of military spending, military presence around the world, a really muscular American presence. Now we have left-wing reformers in the Democratic Party who want to pull back, much as there were voices in the Democratic Party that wanted to shift in that direction back in the 1970s. So we're going to see this shifting going on in both parties in the coming years, but it's all in the context of the tremendous hit to the budget that's been caused by this economic collapse as a result of the coronavirus. So I don't think you're going to see any major moves in any direction regarding military spending until we get a better handle on what the economic situation will be over the next couple of years.
We're talking to Washington Post senior editor Mark Fisher about some top stories in national politics, including the final Senate Intel report on Russia coming up, latest on the Postal Service and the Democratic National Convention. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on those issues. Call in at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post, looking at some top stories in national politics. Let's bring on another caller now. John is with us in Oshkosh. John, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Rob. I was just curious why the Democratic platform doesn't include the necessity to fill in a lot of high-level government positions that are currently vacant or otherwise occupied by people that have no experience in those positions that they've been put in by the Trump administration, nepotism, so to speak. I would think that might fly pretty well with a lot of the Democrats and a little bit left of center people.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Have we seen that line of attack, Mark, people attacking the president for his appointees, many changes, a lot of acting this and that in the cabinet and elsewhere?
The caller is absolutely right. I haven't heard a word about that, and I've watched every minute of the convention. It's kind of curious because it is a natural issue, and it's one that the Biden campaign is really working hard on. I know of several people here in Washington who are working full time now on vetting possible cabinet choices, agency head choices. So that work is well underway, and you would think that the Democrats would want to embrace that as and show their preparedness, their planning, a level of competence that perhaps is lacking on the in the Trump administration. I think we'll hear more of those kinds of attacks on the Trump competence and performance so far tonight, especially perhaps in the vice president's in Kamala Harris's address. That's the traditional vice presidential role at a convention. So we'll probably hear more of that, but it is an issue that they're hard at work on.
I want to switch gears now to what I think in normal times might be the top story today. The Senate Intelligence Committee released its fifth and final report after a years-long investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election and the way that meddling was investigated. What stood out to you? This is a big report. What stood out to you as some key findings?
It's 1,000 pages. I can't claim to have read every one of them. But as you dip into it, you see that this is everything that a lot of people who opposed the Trump administration had hoped the Mueller report would be. And so as bland and as cautious as the Mueller report was about drawing any conclusions, this is a remarkable document because this is a truly bipartisan document that the Senate committee led by Mark Warner of Virginia, the Republican Richard Burr, North Carolina, they have come together and put out a report that makes very clear that the Russians intervened in the 2016 election, that the Trump campaign not only knew about it, but was an active partner in it. It lays out in extraordinary detail the contacts between Trump's people and the Russian agents. The Trump campaign manager, Paul Manafort, had daily contact with an active Russian agent. This is the kind of detail that was not in the Mueller report. It's all laid out here. And the most remarkable thing about it is that this is both a Democratic and Republican document, one that they came together on, again, a sign of bipartisanship that we have not seen in Washington in a long time. People might say, well, where was this before the impeachment? And they went about this in an extremely careful way, and it's a very thorough document. It could not have been produced that quickly. And so there's a lot that's been redacted from there, so it's not an easy read, but the detail in there, it takes us well beyond where we were during the impeachment process.
Bipartisanship aside, key Republicans and Democrats have emphasized different parts of it. I want to give a listen to Marco Rubio, Senator from Florida, talk about what he thought were key findings of the report. Here's a listen from a statement he released on Twitter.
First, we found absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Donald Trump or his campaign colluded with Russia to meddle in our elections. Second, the FBI made some very troubling mistakes, especially by relying on a Steele dossier against the advice of the CIA and without verifying this foreign document or the sources that were used to create it. And third, Russia's still meddling, and now so is China and Iran.
How are you seeing some of the partisan reaction and the partisan, I guess, spin on this playing out?
Well, Rubio is absolutely right. There is criticism of the FBI in this report. It's not enormous. It doesn't take us much beyond what we already knew about. But obviously, the Republicans are going to try to use that in the remaining weeks of the campaign against the Democrats. But Rubio also pointed out that there is extraordinary evidence here that the Russians were and still are trying to meddle in the U.S. election process. That's now a bipartisan consensus. Of course, the president doesn't accept that. The president railing against this report even today. And so there is more of a divide here between some Republicans in Congress and their president than we've seen in recent years.
Talking to Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. I want to get to another piece you worked on for The Post, looking at mask wearing around the country. We've seen polls showing that most people favor masks. A majority, anywhere from 2/3 to 3/4, favor mask mandates. A lot of attention to anti-mask protesters. You went out and looked at people who are getting more active in advocating for masks. What kind of things did you find?
I heard a real frustration. I mean, if you look at the polls, if you go out and talk to folks, there's a very large majority of Americans who are on board with the idea of masks, who are complying with both the recommendations and the mandates. And they're frustrated that this louder, small minority of anti-mask people are getting a lot of the attention because they make a lot more noise. They hold those demonstrations. So you're seeing those pro-mask people kind of stepping up and speaking out. They're not going to hold big demonstrations. They're not going to take weapons and go to state capitals because by their very nature, if they've accepted the idea of masks, they don't want to be around large crowds of people. But in their own ways, through letters to the editor, through grassroots campaigns, through efforts to get their local officials to issue mandates and have stricter rules and enforce those rules, you are seeing movements all across the country to get people to get on board with mask wearing, with social distancing. People, I think, are getting very frustrated with the length of shutdown that we've seen around the country and the continuing ramifications, the surges of cases, the number of deaths, and they are pushing back against the anti-mask crowd. But by nature of the fact that they are mask wearers, those pushbacks are not quite as loud and boisterous as we've seen from the anti-crowd.
And something that struck me was that at least some of the people you talked to were people who were at risk for one reason or another, for whom COVID-19 wouldn't just be a nuisance, probably.
Absolutely. And they are, in many cases, the people who are most upset to see folks pushing back against mask wearing. A lot of people make the comparison to seat belts, which were initially, it's hard to think about it now, but if you go back and look at what happened back when they were first mandated, there was a tremendous pushback, very similar in character to what we're seeing against masks. That kind of classic American sense of leave me alone, I get to make my own choices, this is about individual rights. It's a classic American confrontation we're seeing between that sense of the collective good versus individual rights. And obviously there are great arguments on both sides of that. But as the Supreme Court has said over and over again, there are public health emergencies that trump individual rights. And so, and courts have now said over and over, and more local governments are saying that this is one of those cases.
Last 30 seconds or so, so much news out there. What is on your radar for the next week?
Well, next week we'll be seeing, of course, the Republican convention and a very different kind of message. We've already been told that the couple from St. Louis that waved guns at Black Lives Matter protesters are going to be speaking at the Republican convention. So a very different kind of character to that convention. Whether they'll choose the same style as the Democrats have chosen of kind of embracing Zoom and kind of not trying to repeat what conventions normally look like, that's still to be seen. And I think we'll continue to see rather small audiences for these conventions. And I'm not sure what that says about interest in this campaign or enthusiasm for these candidates.
Mark, thanks again for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
That's Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post, co-author of the biography Trump Revealed. We talked to him about some of the top national political news stories this week, including a Senate report on Russian meddling in the 2016 election, movement on the U.S. Postal Service story, and the Democratic National Convention. We're going to spend some more time talking about that convention coming up in just a few minutes here on the show.